23. To Madame Maria Dmitrievna Isaev, Dostoevsky's future wife. Compare the reminiscences of Baron Wrangel in the appendix. From Semipalatinsk to Kuznetsk. In the Tomsk government, June 4, 1855. A thousand thanks for your dear letter on the journey, my dear and unforgettable friend, Maria Dmitrievna. I hope that you and Alexander Ivanovich, the lady's husband, will allow me to call you both friends. We certainly were friends here, and I trust we shall remain so. Is mere separation to alter us? I believe not, for the parting from you, my dear friends, lies so heavily upon me that by that alone I can judge how very much I cling to you. Just imagine, this is the second letter I have written to you. I had an answer to your dear cordial letter ready for the earlier post, dear Maria Dmitrievna, but I never sent it. Alexander Yegorovich, Baron Wrangel, who was to have taken it to the post, quite suddenly left for Smiev last Saturday, and I never heard of his departure till Sunday. His servant simultaneously disappeared for 2 days, and the letter remained in my pocket. Hard luck. I am now writing to you again, but know not if this letter will get off either. Alexander Yegorovich is not back yet, but they have sent a special messenger after him. Here we hourly expect the Governor-General. He may perhaps be already arrived. It is said that he will spend about 5 days here. But enough of that. How did you arrive at Kuznetsk? I hope and pray that nothing happened to you on the way. You write that you are depressed and even ill, so I am most anxious about you. The mere move caused you such trouble and such unavoidable discomforts, and now there's this illness added. How are you to bear it all? I can think of nothing but you. You know how apprehensive I am, so you can picture my anxiety. My God, how little you, who might be an ornament to any society, deserve this fate with all its petty cares and contrarieties. Accursed destiny! I await your letter with impatience. If only it would come by this post. I went several times to find out if it had, but Alexander Yegorovich is not back yet. You ask me how I pass the time and how I arrange my day without you. For a fortnight I have not known what to do with myself, so sad am I. If you only knew how orphaned I now feel. It is just like the time when they arrested me in 1849, put me in prison, and tore me from all that I loved and prized. So very much had I grown to you. I never looked upon our intercourse as an ordinary acquaintanceship, and now, when I no longer have you near me, I begin to understand many things. I have lived for 5 years entirely without human relations, quite alone, without a creature to whom I could open my heart. But you two treated me like a brother. I remember that from the very first. I felt at home in your house. Alexander Ivanovich could not have been kinder to his own brother than he was to me. With my unendurable character, I must have caused you much vexation, and yet you both loved me. I recognize it and feel it, for indeed I am not quite heartless. You are a wonderful woman. You have a heart of rare childlike kindliness, and you were like a sister to me. The mere fact that a woman should treat me in so friendly a way was a great event in my life. For even the best man is often, if I may say so, a block. Woman's heart, woman's compassion, woman's sympathy, the endless kindness of which we have no clear perception and which, in our obtuseness, we often do not even notice, these are irreplaceable. All that I found in you. Even apart from my many failings, a sister could not have been kinder and more tactful to me than you were. If we did go through some violent upheavals, it was always because I was ungrateful and you were ill, exacerbated and wounded. You were wounded because the disgusting society folk neither prized nor understood you. And anyone with your energy must revolt against all injustice, and that revolt is noble and dignified. These are the essential features of your character. Suffering and circumstances have naturally distorted much in you. But by God, with what usurer's interest was any such failing always redeemed? And since I was not stupid all the time, I saw and treasured it. In one word, I had to love your house as my very own home. I could not do otherwise. I shall never forget you both, and shall be ever grateful to you. For I am convinced that neither of you has the least idea of all you did for me, and how very necessary to me were just such people as you. If I had not had you, I should most likely have turned into a block of wood. But now, I am a human being again. But enough. It is not to be expressed, least of all in a letter. I curse this letter because it reminds me of our parting. Everything reminds me of that. In the twilight, in those hours when I used to go to you, such grief overwhelms me that I could weep if I were at all prone to do so, and I know you would not laugh at my tears. Once for all, my heart is so constituted that everything it loves and treasures grows deeply rooted in it, and when uptorn, causes wounds and suffering. I live quite solitary here now, and have no idea what to do with myself. Everything is spoilt for me. A frightful blank. I have only Alexander Yegorovich now, but in his company I always feel sad, for always I involuntarily compare myself with him, and you can easily imagine what that results in. In any case, he's away just at present. During his absence, I have been twice in the Kasakov Gardens, and I did feel so sad. When I think of last summer, when you, poor dear, had only one wish to get out into the country so that you might have a breath of fresh air, great grief comes over me, and I feel frightfully sorry for you. Do you remember how we, you, Alexander Ivanovich, I, and Yelena, were once in the Kasakov Gardens? How vivid was the sense of it when I went there again. In the gardens nothing has changed, and the seat on which we sat is still standing there. And I felt so sad. You write suggesting that I should live with Wrangel. But I don't want to do that, for I have several weighty reasons against it. First, the question of money. If I lived with him, I should of course have to spend much more money on rent, servants and food, for I wouldn't live at his expense. Second, my character. Third, his character. Fourth, I have noticed that he is much visited by all sorts of people. I don't mean to shut myself off from society, but I can't stand strangers. Finally, I love solitude. I am used to it, and use is second nature. Enough. I have really told you nothing yet. After I had accompanied you to the forest and taken leave of you under a pine tree, which I've marked, I returned arm in arm with Wrangel, who was leading his horse by the bridle, to the Peshishenovs' hospitable abode. It was there that I first realized my desolate state. At first I could see your travelling carriage in the distance, then only hear it, and at last it was quite gone. We got into the droshky and sat talking of you both, and of how you would bear the journey, and it was then that Wrangel told me something that greatly rejoiced me. On the day of your departure, early in the morning, it appears that Pyotr Mikhailovich suggested that they should spend the whole evening together somewhere. Wrangel refused the offer, and when Pyotr Mikhailovich asked him why, he answered, because I must see the Isaevs off. There were some other people there. Pyotr Mikhailovich asked at once, "Then you know that pair very well?" Vrangel answered somewhat stiffly that he had only known you for a short time, but thought your house one of the pleasantest possible, and that its mistress, that is you, was a woman such as he had seen none to equal since he had been in Petersburg, and probably never would see again. A woman such as you have never seen at all, he added, and I consider her acquaintance the greatest honour. This story of Vrangel's gave me extraordinary joy. I think the opinion of a man like that, who knows ladies in the best society, for in such society he was born, is quite decisive. Talking of similar subjects, and continually abusing the Peshishenovs, we reached the town about sunrise, and the driver, to whom we had given no orders, took us straight to my house. In this way the proposed tea fell through, of which I was very glad, for I was longing to be alone. I stayed at home a good while, walking up and down in my room, looking at the sunrise, and going over the whole past year, which had flown by so rapidly for me. All the memories came up, and I grew very sad, thinking of my future. From that day I wander about aimlessly, like the wandering Jew. I go scarcely anywhere. Everything seems tiresome. I've been once to Grishin's, who is going to Kopal, and is now breaking up house. He's going to Vierny too. To Marder's, who says I've grown thin. To Shulichka's, I took him my birthday greetings, where I met the Peshishenovs and talked with them. I visit Bielichov now and then, and finally go to camp for drill. I am frequently ill. How impatiently I awaited the return of the Tatar guides. Every minute I was running to Ordinsky's to find out something about it, and so was Silota. I have also been once to your house, brought away the ivy, it's here now, and saw the orphaned Serka, who ran to meet me, crazy with joy, but will not be induced to leave the house. At last the guides came back. Your letter, for which I thank you infinitely, was a great joy to me. I asked the Tatars many a question. They told me a lot, and praised you above all things. Everyone praises you, Maria Dmitrievna. I gave them a little money. The next day I met Koptyov at Vrangel's. He told me things too, but I couldn't ask him about what interested me most of all, namely how your travelling expenses had worked out. The question was too ticklish. To this day I can't imagine how you ever got over the journey. How dear your letter is, Maria Dmitrievna. I expected just such a one. It is so full of detail. Write me letters like that always. I can see your grandmother as if she were before my eyes, the bad old woman. How she adds to your troubles and embitters your life. May she stay with her lapdog to the end of her days. I hope that Alexander Ivanovich will squeeze that last will and testament out of her without ever letting her enter the house in person. She must be made to see that it's the best arrangement even for herself. Otherwise, she must undertake in writing to die within 3 months, and for each month pay 1,000 rubles. On that condition alone should you receive her. Shall you really, with your feeble health, be obliged to attend to all the lapdogs? Such old women are truly unbearable. I read your letter to Vrangel, only parts of it, of course. I could not help going once to see Yelena. The poor thing is so lonely. I am so immensely sorry that you were ill on the way. When shall I get a letter from you? I am so anxious. How were you on arrival? I shake Alexander Ivanovich mightily by the hand and kiss him. I hope he'll soon write to me. I embrace him warmly as friend and brother and wish him better health than he had here. And does he mean to be as entirely indiscriminate about people in Kuznetsk as he was in Semipalatinsk? Are all those fellows really worth associating with, eating and drinking with, and afterwards taking all conceivable basenesses from? In that way, one injures oneself with eyes wide open. What a loathsome lot they are, and above all, what a dirty lot. When one was in their company, one often felt one's soul to be as soiled as if one were in a low dram shop. I hope Alexander Ivanovich won't be angry with me for my wishes and my advice. Farewell, unforgettable Maria Dmitrievna. Farewell. We shall meet again, shan't we? Write to me very often and very much. Write to me about Kuznetsk, about the new people you know, and as much as possible about yourself. Kiss Pasha from me. Farewell, farewell. Oh, when shall we see one another again? Fyodor Dostoevsky.